Okay, I'll admit it. I have an addiction to leather. My wife says, why do you buy so much of this stuff from Colonel Littleton? Who the heck is Colonel Littleton? Well, I've talked about the Colonel on my radio show several times. He has this business in Linville, Tennessee. I think it's Linville, yeah. And first time I ever became aware of Colonel Littleton, I was at the Mast General Store in, where was I? Asheville, I think. And I was walking through the store, and I've been looking at clothes and stuff, which bores me to tears. And I got to this little a glass-enclosed counter, and it had a bunch of knickknacks in it, and it had a portfolio that is made out of leather. I said, well, that looks cool. So I asked the lady to get it out. I looked at it, and I said, well, this is nice. How much is it? What? I couldn't believe how expensive it was. So I told her to put it back and everything, and I walked around the store, went and looked at shoes and backpack, you know, the general stuff that you see at the Mast General Store. Came back, bought that thing, and since then, I'd hate to admit how much I've bought from Colonel Littleton. Most of the time I order, go to ColonelLittleton.com. And it's mostly for guys, I think. They do sell purses and I think there's a canvas and leather backpack that they offer for ladies, but it's mostly briefcases and portfolios. So I'm looking right now, I'm over my shoulder at my Colonel Littleton Commander's briefcase, and inside that is my Colonel Littleton holster, and right beside that is my Colonel Littleton knickknack bag, where I keep all my wars, you know, for my computers and iPhone and all the different things I have to charge. You know, you got to have a lot of cables and chargers. Oh, yeah, my camera charger there. So, yeah, that's another addiction I have is camera equipment. Let's not get into any more addictions. One of them I'm trying to get over right now is buying any more cars for a while. I need to sell some. Although I am pretty much semi-mentally committed to buy this 1930 Model A Roadster. It is just so pretty. So well done. A friend of mine that lives not too far from here has it, and he's wanting to sell it. He's got several other Model Ts and stuff, but I just, you know, it's hard. You can't justify it. You know, it's going to be a showpiece for a while, something I put in the showroom and drive the kids around. I think they'll enjoy riding in a rumble seat. Can you put a car seat in a rumble seat? Probably not. I just have to give them rides up and down the driveway. I think their mothers will allow that. You know, isn't it funny how we build a case? You know, we decide we want something. Well, I can't justify that, so we build a case for it. I had a lady in yesterday. She was building a case to buy a truck. And, you know, I've sold her a bunch of vehicles, and she's always had cars, and then she graduated to SUVs and crossovers. And she still has a Nissan Rogue, and now she's wanting a truck. And she said, Lenny, do you think I ought to buy a truck? I said, well, what are you going to use it for? And she said, well, occasionally I like to haul stuff. Well, can't you haul stuff in your Rogue? Well, no, I don't want to get it dirty. And, you know, all my friends, all my girlfriends have trucks, or their husbands have trucks. I don't have access to a truck. So I want a truck. I said, okay, well, let's look at trucks. So we went out on the lot. We started with large, then we went to medium, and then we went to small. So first thing we do is we go up to the F-150. She, oh, no, that's way too big. I don't need anything that big. I said, okay, well, let's go to medium. So we went to the Ford Ranger and the Nissan Frontier. So she liked the Frontier better because the Ranger, even though they're about the same size, the Ranger looks bigger. I think the bedside is just taller, and she would have a hard time, you know, getting stuff into it, she said. So as of this point, the Frontier is the front runner. And then I said, okay, we got one more truck to look at. It's the small. She said, okay, well, let's look at it. It's the Maverick. So I took her over to the Maverick, and she really liked it. She liked it was easier. She's not very tall. She's about 5'2", and it was easier for her to get in and out of the Maverick. But she did not like the 4.5-foot bed size. So then we're back to the Nissan Frontier. And then I walked around to the window sticker, and I said, okay, well, this truck's $42,000. $42,000? You know, because I don't really like to talk price. at first, I like for somebody to try things on for size and kind of get a feel for what they like. You know, if somebody really likes something, then they'll pay a little bit more to get it, won't you? It's just like me. I mean, you could go buy a leather briefcase at Staples, and it would probably hold everything that I need to hold. But I like the Colonel. And it's, I don't, you know, probably it's the buffalo hide. Yeah, this briefcase that I've got, the Commander, it's a combination of steer hide and buffalo hide. So it's got kind of a rugged look. But that being said, people will pay more, right, for something that they really like or really want. So she was shocked a little bit about the price, and I understood that. I said, would you consider a used one? Oh, no, I don't want to buy a used one. I said, well, let me show you what I have. Don't prejudge. So we just traded for another Ranger. I know the bedside's too high, but this one was a super cab, which means it's not full or four full-size doors. It's just two full-size doors and then a little mini door. She liked that. And it has a little bit longer bed. Plus, it's $10,000 cheaper, has 30,000 miles on it, which is not bad for a 2019 model. And so, guess which one she's buying? The used Ranger. It makes more sense. Yeah, it's a little bit taller, but how often do you load stuff from the side anyway? Normally, you drop the tailgate, so I showed her that. It's got a 6-foot bed instead of a 5.5-foot bed on the Nissan and a 4.5-foot bed on the Maverick. So, and you know, plus she's saving $10,000. And she had two trade-ins, so that worked out pretty well. She had a 2000 Mazda B3000. And she had no idea that particular vehicle back then in 2000, that Mazda truck was actually built by Ford. It's actually a Ford Ranger. When I told her that, she was in shock. She thought it was built by Mazda. Well, it says Mazda on it, but it's not built by Mazda. I think it was 1994 when Mazda said, okay, we can't manufacture trucks overseas and ship them into the United States because of the chicken tax. I've explained what the chicken tax is before, but they had to stop, and they said, okay, since Ford owned 30% of Mazda, they said, Ford, would you build us, can we just change a few things on the truck and call it a Mazda B3000? They said, sure. So Ford manufactured the B3000 and the B4000 for Mazda. So she really liked that truck, and I insisted on one more thing. And I always do this, folks. I always insist on a test drive. Remember, she's 5'2". 5'2 person fits in a vehicle differently than I do. I'm 6'3". So I have no problem seeing out of it. So she sat in. She said, oh, the seat's too low. First impression. So I said, well, that's what this little lever is. So I pumped the seat up, and it just went just up higher and higher and higher. Oh, this is wonderful. I can see out of it. I said, well, let's go for a test drive. Oh, I don't need to drive. Yes, you are going to drive this vehicle. So I got into the passenger side, and she, folks, I can talk to her like this because I've known her for 30 years. If you came in, I might talk a little bit differently. But anyway, I got in the passenger side. We're going down the road, and she looked over at me, and she said, I like this. This drives better than my Nissan Rogue does. And I said, well, it does drive pretty good, and you'll get pretty good gas mileage with it. Can you see out of it okay? Are the mirrors big enough? Yeah, I love these mirrors. So, you know, I want her to be happy with this purchase. And it's my goal. I mean, I realize this is a second vehicle for her. She didn't need to spend an extra $10,000. Now, I'm not going to advise a lot of people on that kind of stuff unless they want my input. You know, sometimes people come in and they've got their mind made up and they don't want you trying to talk sense into them, you know, if that's what they want. But I don't know, sometimes I have a hard time not saying what's on my mind. I've seen too many people over my 45-year career make terrible buying decisions. I've literally seen people come in to buy a pickup truck and leave in a Camaro. You know, my goal is always retain the customer, retain the relationship. Long-term relationships are way better than selling somebody something one time and never seeing them again. So we came back from the test drive, and she still wants to think about it. You know what would happen at a lot of dealerships? They would just put the hammer down right then. They'd bring the sales manager over and say, "Are you sure you want to? What do you want to think about?" You know, that kind of stuff. They'd start bringing the heat. So, but that's not what I do. And I said, I tell you what, you go home and think about it. If you have any questions, here's my cell phone number. Call me tonight. Well, she had my cell phone number. She said, "I already have your cell phone number, Lenny." I give my cell phone number to everybody. So, you know, she may call me tonight. She may not. She may come in tomorrow. She asked me to hold the vehicle for her. Now, will most dealerships do that? No. But, you know, if you have a good relationship with them, if you've been doing business with them a long time, I'm an advocate of that, then, yeah, they'll hold the vehicle for you. But don't ask them to hold it for a week. I mean, you should be able to make a decision. But see how many times we changed gears here? Looking at different vehicles, test driving different things to find what fit her the best. That's so important to do that, so that when you finally agree to the sale price and then get the monthly payment set and make decision about an extended warranty and all that stuff, when you leave and you wake up and you go to bed and you wake up the next morning and you still feel good about it, that's what we want, and that's what you want. All right, I'm going to take my first break. I'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, I am back. What was the chicken tax? You know what that was? You ever heard of that? Well, back when we first became a Chevrolet dealer, we sold a little truck called the Love Truck, L-U-V. That was our small truck that we had. They didn't come in crew cabs or extended cabs. It was just a regular cab truck with a little bed on it. I guess, yeah, we had four-wheel drive and two-wheel drive. If you were a Ford dealer, you probably sold something called the Ford Courier. And that was made by Mazda. Now, the Love Truck was made by Isuzu. I love saying that. Dodge, they didn't call them Ram back then. They had a little truck called the Ram. That's where that name originated. And it was made by Mitsubishi. So they were affiliated with Mitsubishi at the time. So all of these trucks were made in Japan. And there was a little problem. It was called the chicken tax. The chicken tax arose from, well, it was after World War II, and the farmers in France and all over Europe, they were just devastated from all the destruction, as you can imagine, with all the war that was going on in their homeland. And so their farms really took a big hit, and it took a long time for them to recover. So where did they get a lot of their food from? The United States. And they got they imported chickens, a lot of chickens from here. Well, these chickens, as the farms and the farmers recovered in Europe, the farmers said, "You know, we need to get a break from all these chickens coming from the United States. They are flooding the market. We can't produce chickens as cheaply as they can produce them and ship them over here. So we need a tariff." So France was the first one to put a tariff on American chickens. Well, Lyndon Baines Johnson was the president at the time, and the chicken farmers over in the United States just pitched a fit. And so he said, "Well, if you're going to put a tariff on our chickens, then we're going to put a tariff on your small trucks." And that's exactly what they did. Small trucks, any type of a utility vehicle like vans and stuff like that were coming from overseas, they imposed a 25% tariff on their small trucks. Well, for a while, that was okay. But when it got up to the early 70s, they just could not make any money selling those trucks. They just ran out of margin. So companies like Ford made a deal with Mazda. Mazda said, we just can't do this anymore. So Ford started building the Mazda truck. Let's see what happened with Ram. Well, Ram just quit selling these trucks altogether, and then they ended up coming out with a mid-sized truck. You remember what it was called? That's right, the Dakota. And then Chevrolet said, "Well, we can't sell the Love Trucks anymore. Can't import them anymore because of that 25% duty." So they came out with a truck called the Chevy S10. And boy, we sold a bunch of those as a Chevy dealer. So basically, the Chrysler Corporation with the Dakota, the Dodge Dakota, created a new segment, the mid-sized truck. Chevy was selling S10s, which were considerably smaller. Ford was selling the Ranger, and I'm trying to think. Toyota had to come out with the Tacoma. They were all small, but the Dakota created a new niche. I always get those confused. I'm going to have to look that up. And they did really well for a long time. Now, they got terrible gas mileage. They had a V6 engine. They got even worse mileage than the V8 engine did. But they were able to sell those for a long time, and then the gas started becoming a problem and fuel economy and stuff. So they just abandoned it altogether. They have still not come out with a small truck or a mid-sized truck. Now, Ford actually built the Ranger through 2011, then they pulled the plug on the Ranger because they couldn't meet the impact standards, the crash standards that had been set. So they just said, okay, well, we're kind of tight on funds right now, so let's just not do anything. But Chevrolet took a different approach. They decided to change the name of the truck to the Colorado, and they sold the Wiz out of the Colorado and did well. And they continued to grow. And so Ford looked up and said, well, we're building a really nice truck called the Ranger in, let's see, Australia. And matter of fact, I was on a cruise in the Mediterranean, and one of the places that we, or one of the islands that we landed on, was the island of Corsica. And so I'm sitting there with some of my dealer friends. It was a dealer trip, and I'm sitting there on the just waiting for a bus to come by to take us to this little town we wanted to see. And all of a sudden, I look down the road, and I'm standing beside another Ford dealer, and I said, looky there, is that what I think it is? Yeah, I think it is. That's a Ranger. So it was the Ranger that they were selling overseas, and it was sold everywhere except the United States. Well, Ford had kind of figured that out since Chevrolet was doing such a good job with the Colorado, and they were already building the Ranger and selling it very successfully all over the world. They said, well, let's just change it so it'll work in the United States. So they did, and it's been a big success story as well. But nobody made a small truck anymore. And so what happened? I'll tell you here in just a minute. It just seems kind of weird to be able to buy a full-size truck and a mid-size truck, but there's no such thing as a small truck. Well, Hyundai had a brilliant idea. Said, let's build a small truck. And they did. It's called the Santa Cruz. Have you seen one? They're pretty cute, kind of swoopy looking. And when I say that, I mean curvaceous. They're not boxy. But Ford decided to go a different route. They already had developed and were selling the Bronco Sport, not the full-size Bronco, but the Bronco Sport. And they said, we got this wonderful chassis. Let's turn it into a truck. So they did, and they called it the Maverick. Now, the Maverick from the 70s was a car, not a very good car. Of course, there wasn't much that was good in the 70s. I mean, Chevrolet was selling Vegas, and Ford was selling Pintos. So that says enough right there. But the Maverick became a truck, and we can't get enough of them. That has really been a great success story, except for the fact that we had a pandemic and couldn't get chips. And, you know, because small vehicles don't have the margins, the profit margins that loaded up F-150s and stuff do, then what the manufacturers are doing is they're shifting a lot of their chip production to the more profitable vehicles. So we can't get many Mavericks. There aren't many out there. But anyway, it's been very successful up to this point for what was available. I mean, we still have probably 25 sold orders that are just been languishing, waiting for the production to pick up. I think all of this is going to sort itself out over time. But the truck market is a great market. We haven't even talked about the heavy-duty market. That is pretty much dominated by Ford, although Chevrolet and GMC as well, I always forget them, and Ram have great offerings as far as the heavy-duty market. Who buys a heavy-duty truck? Who buys an F-250 or a 350? Well, it's people who tow a lot. Of course, a lot of people buy the F-250. They tell us. They just like the way it sits. They like the way it looks. It does have a different stance than an F-150. You have to climb into it, which I used to drive F-250s all the time, but I got tired of having to climb into it. So I started I switched F-150s. They ride better. They're quieter and so forth. But people who buy F-350s and 450s, they're towing something heavy. They're pulling a fifth wheel. They're pulling a gooseneck, you know, with a tractor on the back of it. They use them for work, and nobody sells more, like I say, heavy-duty trucks than the Ford Motor Company does. But they're all good. You know, that's the great thing about the car business right now, or if you're in the market for a car. Yes, I sell Ford and Nissans, but I realize that, you know, everybody's not in the market for what I sell. And it's just really hard to make a mistake buying a product unless you buy the wrong product for your needs. You know, don't be the person that goes in to buy a truck and leaves in a Camaro. And most of our truck customers, the 75%, the men, they know what they're going to use their trucks for. It's either going to be a personal use vehicle. They use the bed occasionally. You know, they don't need long beds. I mean, the shortest bed you could get when my dad first became a Chevrolet dealer was 6.5 feet long. Most of what we sold was the 8-foot bed because they were being used by farmers and they needed to haul a lot of stuff. Now, like the bed on my truck, it's a monster F-150, but it's got a 5.5-foot bed because, you know, that's all that I need. They still make a 6.5-foot bed. They still make a 8-foot bed. So most of the people know what they want. Now, if you're, you know, you're one of the 15%ers and you're just buying it as a second vehicle, I would make sure that I test drive several different things. We've sold full-size trucks to people before, and they said, no, this is just too big, you know, and then they're wanting to trade it in 3 or 4 months later. Good thing about trucks is they hold their value pretty well, especially now. But, you know, test drive what you're thinking about buying. Make sure you buy the right thing for your needs, and I think you'll be a lot happier. If you have any questions about this kind of stuff or you need some guidance, I'm here. 423-552-2020. That is my cell phone number. You can text me, too, to that number, or you can email me, which a lot of folks do, at LennyLawson2020@gmail.com. Well, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.